Welcome to Sports Beat KC, the Kansas City Stars daily sports podcast. It's Friday, November 20th, and I'm Blair Kirchhoff. Just before recording today, Missouri's football team boarded a chartered flight and headed toward South Carolina. Playing a scheduled game used to be a given in sports, but not in 2020. So the Tigers are set to play at South Carolina on Saturday, and beat writer Soichi Terada joins us to talk about Mizzou's first game in 3 weeks. After a break, we switch sports and talk with Sean Goodwin about Sporting Kansas City's playoff opener Sunday against San Jose. A reason to feel optimistic about Sporting's chances is the play of goalkeeper Tim Melia. Sean tells us what's made Melia one of the league's best at his position. So let's get started with Soichi Terada talking Mizzou. Hello, Soichi. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Blair. Never have I ever been so relieved to see a football team fly out to their next game. Usually that's kind of a guarantee or kind of something that we took for granted. But this week, Blair, I see some people posting on Twitter that they're headed to Columbia East, and I think Mizzou fans should be very happy about that.
I've seen the photograph on Twitter of the Sun Country Airlines, the charter airline that with the with the stairs out on the tarmac. So stairs to the airplane. I'm assuming coaches and players are on and have boarded and are winging their way to the other Columbia to play Saturday's game. And listen, it's been well documented. It's no secret. Games have we have to wait until sometimes this long into the week to determine whether teams are going to play. And there was another game, I can't remember which one it was, that I saw that was called off today. So that brings the total to, I know at least 16 college football games aren't being played this weekend after 15 weren't played last weekend. There are no guarantees in college football. And it would have been really difficult for Missouri not to have reached the threshold of minimum number of players just because it has been a while since we've seen the Tigers play.
Yeah, Blair, it's you mentioned all the canceled games. The SEC actually only had one postponed game. It was Mississippi and Texas A&M, and that was squared away pretty early, which was nice. So, yeah, and you mentioned the SEC roster thresholds. I was actually told that, at least on the Mizzou side, I can't speak for South Carolina, but they always kind of felt pretty optimistic going forward about this game. Obviously, last week for the Georgia game, they actually went down on a positional – they went below the positional threshold at defensive line, which causes postponement. But it sounds like even if Mizzou had fallen below the 53-player SEC threshold this week, the game was likely still going to go on. And I think and you mentioned this, Blair. I mean, Mizzou hasn't played a football game in all of November. You know, we're recording this on Friday, November 20th, and I believe it's posted today. So that's a long time to go without a football game, especially mid-season. So I think Mizzou and perhaps even South Carolina post-firing of Will Muschamp, they were both pretty motivated to get this game, and regardless of maybe even if they had fallen below that 53-player roster threshold.
Right. Okay, well, let's do something unusual and talk about a football game that's going to be played on Saturday. I'm really interested to see how the Tigers respond. I know that when they played Florida in their last game, it was the Gators that hadn't played in a while, and you kind of wondered how Florida would respond to the Tigers, who had been playing. I think Florida had that was a 3 week late. It had been 3 weeks since they had played when they met Missouri, and Florida looked the part in the first half. Didn't play particularly well. It was close at halftime. Of course, it was the fight at halftime. That's what everybody remembers about that game. But then Florida found its stride in the second half and ran away. What do you expect from a Missouri team that hasn't played in a while at South Carolina? Is there a good possibility of coming out a little bit out of sync and just not hitting on all cylinders early?
Yeah, I think that's always a concern, Blair. And the thing that kind of strikes me, and I wrote about this, is it's kind of a weird fine line in the sense that you really want to stay sharp during practices, but at the same time, when you're so close to losing players, an injury or two, you know, can wipe out your slim margin. So I think I really do think you're going to see Russ kind of like you mentioned with Florida, at least in the first half. I don't know how much that would matter, just because the South Carolina defense is just absolutely decimated in terms of opt-outs and injuries and transfers and all these different things. And they lost, you know, their two starting cornerbacks and I believe a safety, and you were already giving up droves and droves of points in the past three games, which is why Will Muschamp got fired. So I think you'd be a little more concerned if you were playing maybe a Florida or a Georgia after a long layoff. But I think with a reeling South Carolina team under interim coach Mike Bobo, I really think that's kind of a fortunate draw for Mizzou.
Yeah, it's just been a crazy season for South Carolina after giving up losing their first two to Tennessee and Florida. Not unexpected. They beat Vanderbilt and then have a great win, really, over Auburn, a team that I've got in my top 25. I think Auburn's a pretty good team this year. But then they give up 52 to LSU, 48 to Texas A&M, and 59 to Ole Miss. So it's just been sort of one defensive disaster after another for the Gamecocks. And as you said, Suichi, it got their head coach Will Muschamp fired. Interim coach Mike Bobo, I remember him at Colorado State having a few bowl seasons at Colorado State before things went the wrong way for him there. You know, who knows how South Carolina is going to react to a new coach, an interim coach. Sometimes that for at least a game, maybe two, it sparks a team. But I don't know if I get a sense in this case that a new coach is going to inspire a South Carolina team that's just, you know, really in the doldrums right now. How do you – the Tigers are, what, a six-and-a-half-point favorite in this game, and I wouldn't be surprised if it ended up more than that.
Yeah, it's funny, Blair. I'm glad you mentioned it. Kind of lost in this week was that Mizzou is a betting favorite. For the first time all season, they were underdogs in five straight games. I guess six if you count the postponed Georgia game, excuse me. That's kind of the sense I get, Blair. And I think in any other season, maybe you could look at it as a positive and think, hey, maybe the players will be a little bit more motivated to, you know, get their interim coach a win and everything like that. But I really think a few things are kind of going against that notion. I mean, you only have three games left if you're the Gamecocks in a 2020 season. And one, you're reeling, you're on a three-game losing streak, your coach just got fired, there's only three games, but then you throw the whole COVID-19 pandemic on top of it. And then I really think, I don't know how much this plays into it, but as you mentioned, Blair, like Mike Bobo was at Colorado State recently, and maybe if it was an assistant coach who had been around the program as long as Muschamp, maybe things, you know, maybe the players could kind of look at that and be like, hey, he's been our guy, and he's been there every step of the way, but that hasn't been quite the case. So that's kind of another weird thing. And then, so I think just between all of those factors and you just feel a little bit, you know, kind of disheartened just with all of the opt-outs. I mean, you lose your best player, arguably your best player, potentially a first-round NFL draft pick in J.C. Horn at cornerback. And then you lose other guys in that secondary that was just giving up so many points. And you wonder how much of that is on the players, how much of that is on scheme. But when you lose pieces like that, and we've seen Connor Bazelak has been able to sling this ball against, you know, kind of a bad secondary in that LSU game. So I think if you're Mizzou, one, you know, you try to get back that rhythm that we've mentioned, but you also try to kind of exploit maybe a secondary that's starting and playing a bunch of unproven players, and maybe you can pad a little bit more stats and feel a little bit good about yourself, just because Mizzou hasn't had a blowout win this season, just, you know, against Kentucky and LSU, great wins, but maybe they can feel a little bit better coming out of this game and for the rest of the season, because it does ease up considerably.
Yeah, it's the first of four games left on Missouri's original schedule. Am I right about that? Am I counting? Have I got the right amount of fingers on my hand here? after South Carolina, it is it Arkansas next week, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then Odom's Arkansas. Yep.
And then Mississippi. Right. And then Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. And then is it Vanderbilt? And are they going to make up the Georgia game?
Yeah, so the SEC actually announced last Friday, kind of a news dump, but kind of maybe overshadowed or whatever. But SEC actually announced that they had accepted that December 19th, which is the same day as the SEC championship game, can be used as an alternate date. And so I think the reason they haven't quite moved the Mizzou-Georgia game is the fact that the Bulldogs, so technically, I doubt it'll happen because they lost to Florida, but they're still technically kind of in the SEC East race. So should Florida drop a couple more games the rest of the season, I think you might see some shuffling near the end of the year. But as of now, I think all signs point to Mizzou, Georgia on December 19th.
Okay, very good. Hey, and let's you had a story in today's paper, and you and pulled out a stat that I did not realize involving Larry Rountree III. When he rushes for 100 yards or more, good things tend to happen for the Tigers. That is, they're 2-0 when that happens, and they haven't won when it doesn't happen. So we talked about Connor Bazelak and his ability, but I agree with what you wrote, Suici, that you get Larry Rountree established. That's also a very good thing for Missouri.
Yeah, I mean, it's so simple, and you know, I kind of struggled whether using it or not, just because it is a very small sample size of five games. But in asking Eli about it, I think he made a great point in terms of just it being about game script, just because when I rewatched during this very extended long break, I rewatched all five games Mizzou has played. And it really does seem like when they get behind by too much, which happened in those losses, that they kind of just abandon the run game. You don't really see Larry Rountree featured as much. And I really think that's a shame, just because even going into the season, you really thought your running back situation between Rountree and Tyler Beatty, you really thought that was a strength of your team. So anytime you go away from that, I think you kind of take away something that's pretty vital to that offense. And I really think, you know, I mean, Larry Rountree's story has been told very well under recruited, you know, coming out of North Carolina and everything. And the thing that he kind of brings is just that, you know, he's going to take every touch seriously. He's going to run, you know, as hard as he can on however many carries he has, which was, I believe, 37 against Kentucky. So I just think he's such a big part of this offense. And when you look at the stats, it's simple, yes, but I think it kind of dictates other things. You look at it and you kind of look at Larry Rountree and hope that he kind of gets the maybe the credit or fans will remember him very well just because of his time at Mizzou and everything.
Well, and he has a chance to make some history too on Saturday with just a couple of carries, few carries. He'll become the he'll go to the top of the list of career rushing yards by a Missouri running back, not in Missouri history, but by a Missouri running back, right? So I think Zach Abrons is at the top of that list.
Yes. So unfortunately for Rountree, and I actually thought about this, if he stayed another year with the blank kid eligibility, he could have made it, but he accepted a Senior Bowl invite, so that probably won't happen. But it's a little bit rough, just because you look at the stats and you see Brad Smith and what he's done and everything, and you look at the stats and you're kind of like, okay, maybe that's a little bit too far for this season. So Brad Smith is at 4,289. Rountree is 19 yards away from passing Zach Abrons, who's at 3,198, so still over 1,000 yards there. But yeah, I mean, being the most prolific running back in Mizzou history, I think still goes a long way, just because you got guys like Zach Abrons and Brock Oliva is obviously a legend, and all those backs that you've seen in Mizzou history, very talented backs. And the fact that Larry Rountree has a chance to kind of stand on top of all of that is, I think, is a testament to him and his longevity and this way he means to his team as a senior captain. And whatever the media speaks to him, I mean, I personally love speaking to Larry Rountree, just because he gives thoughtful answers. You know, maybe sometimes after a loss, it's a little bit more mum, but every other time, man, he's very thoughtful, and you can tell he you know, just considers the question and thinks about the question. I don't think that's a guarantee with college students sometimes. So I appreciate Larry's thoughtfulness and eloquence and everything.
Yeah, I agree. I've been impressed with him on the Zoom calls and after games whenever else he's made available to the media. So, okay, game is at 6:30 Central Time on Saturday at Columbia, South Carolina. The game is on the SEC Network Alternative. So I'm getting a little tired of that Missouri gets banned banished to the alternative network, but so it is. If you can get it on ESPN3 too, if you're having trouble getting it on the alternate. So, all right, Suici Tirada, great catching up with you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, thanks, Blair.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Blair. We have a special subscription offer for SportsBeat KC listeners: unlimited digital access to the Kansas City Star's award-winning sports coverage. Sign up now for 1 year of Sports Pass for access to all the sports news, features, and columns presented on the KansasCity.com site, and it's only $30. That's a 40% savings off our regular rate. Your subscription will automatically renew after the initial term at $50 unless you tell us to cancel. Your subscription helps support the sports coverage of KansasCity.com and the Kansas City Star, and that support has never been more important. Please visit KansasCity.com/SportsBeatKCOffer to get this special offer. And as always, thanks for listening. Sean Goodwin covers Sporting Kansas City for the Star, and it is playoff time. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Blair. As you say, it's playoff time. I'm excited. It's also playoff time for high school football, which I also do. So it's an exciting time of the year for me right now.
Yeah. Look, and we don't take sports for granted in 2020, right? Yeah. I mean, it's we went months without anything, and soccer really kind of paved the way for sports to return.
Yeah.
on the globe, and now we're getting the postseason for MLS. Sporting Kansas City takes on the San Jose Earthquakes on Sunday at Children's Mercy Park. Just a general thought, Sean, on is Sporting in as good a position, mentally, emotionally, every way you can be to begin a playoff run?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've obviously had a couple of weeks off now to help assist with their health and whatnot, so health and tactics-wise, especially preparing for San Jose team, which is a little different to what, you know, most other teams in the league play. So it's good to have extra time to prepare. Player-wise, I mean, you're missing Gutierrez and Zusi per usual. Apparently, Beasley isn't available this weekend, but, I mean, we didn't expect him to start anyway. So aside from that, I know Polito was still game day decision, but you know, heading into the playoffs, Sporting are honestly nearly as good as you wish they could be for, you know, what you've dealt with this season.
And in something of an unusual twist, correct me if I'm wrong, but Sporting and San Jose will be meeting each other for the first time this year. Usually in a playoff situation, it's a team that you've faced, especially if in the, you know, in the conference, a team that you faced multiple times during the season. These teams mm-hmm. have not met during the season.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you know, regular season, you play home and away versus your conference, and then you play your conference one time through. So, obviously, because of COVID and scares, we've played four games against Minnesota and four games against Colorado and Houston. So, I think it'll be nice for all of us to just have a different team to watch, honestly. A little bit something different for the coaches and players to prepare for too.
Hey, and Sean, so Sporting won the won their side, right? Finished first in the West.
Yeah.
So I'm going on. You know, I get these emails from online betting companies. Mm-hmm. And, I get them constantly about NFL and college football, NBA, Major League Baseball. But I saw some MLS betting lines this week. And although Sporting finished, you know, with a terrific record and, again, mm-hmm. first in the West, the odds of Sporting winning the MLS Cup are below about four or five others, all from the East, I noticed. And even in the West, I think Seattle was given a nod over a betting nod over Sporting Kansas City. Does that seem right to you?
You know, I won't be completely against it. I mean, you know, I think you said you were probably six favorites or something, despite finishing third in the supporters. But obviously a big part, I guess, as well is it's one and done. You know, you win or you go home, and Sporting has been pretty good the past, you know, four or five games defensively, but we do know that, unfortunately, this is a team where they can fall apart in the last 5 minutes, give up a stupid goal, and that could be the end of the season. So you mentioned that, and again, below in the Western Conference, you had Seattle and Portland both below Sporting in the standings, but they're both teams who they have the recent history of going deep in the playoffs and, you know, winning MLS Cups recently. And I know Sporting was only, what, 7 years ago, but it's nearly a different team at this point. We haven't really, apart from the Western Conference Finals run in 2018, we haven't had a deep run for Sporting. So, you know, solid team. I definitely think they, of course, stand a chance. But when you look at some of your teams in play who have maybe a little bit more experience going deeper in the playoffs, you've got Sporting with such a young team, a lot of guys, it's going to be their first playoff run. It doesn't wholly surprise me, but if I was a betting man, which I'm not because I'm 24 and poor, Sporting KC will be a good bet to hedge. I'll definitely put my money on them.
Okay. One of the reasons that there would be to like Sporting Kansas City in a playoff situation is Tim Melia, the goalkeeper. Yes. And he's really seems to be at the top of his game right now, which is saying plenty, because he's been a terrific keeper for this franchise for mm-hmm. quite a while. You wrote a really nice story about Tim Melia earlier in the week. I wanted to take you back to that, and what did you discover, what did you find most interesting about Tim Melia?
Yeah, I think it's a facet that a lot of people don't think about, because, you know, down the years, everyone knows Tim Melia's ties of telling the story of how he was a poor goalkeeper to one of the best in MLS. Everyone knows that he's tired of saying it. But a lot of people do think that his story starts there when, you know, like many people just through life, I guess it doesn't. He had to get to that point to start. And one of his big things was sitting behind, you know, goalkeepers during his time at Chivas with Kennedy and Nick Salt Lake with Nick Romando. And, you know, these are some of MLS's best goalkeepers in the last, you know, 10 or 20 years, really. So, yeah, we talked a lot about, you know, it's a double-edged sword in that, yes, he was stuck behind these great goalkeepers. He wasn't being given an opportunity to play. But at the same time, he could study these guys at the top of the profession and how they play and, you know, what makes them a good goalkeeper. And obviously, every goalkeeper has their own style, which Tim Melia has built himself, whether it's, you know, playing out the back, playing with his feet. But then he was saying, like with Romando, he learned to. He looks like he's just standing upright, but he's always on edge, always ready. That's a big part of his game. So it was just super interesting to talk about a facet of his life and his career that people don't really concentrate on, which was his life before the spotlight and the plaudits, I suppose.
You know, he is exceptional in many ways, but where he stands out in an incredible way is on penalty kicks.
Yeah.
And there was the game against, I'm pretty sure it was Chicago earlier this season at, I can't remember if it was a home or away, because every game's on TV, right? That's how we consume them. Yeah. But he has a big mistake in the first 30 seconds of that game. And just you take us through what happened and how he responded to what happened.
Yeah, so literally the first 30 seconds, it's against Chicago, who's obviously, you know, certainly not the top of the league. It's a good chance for home for Sporting to pick up points. And literally within 30 seconds, the ball comes back to Melia and he just botches the clearance right away, sends it straight into the feet of a Chicago player. And, you know, they run into the box, and in his haste to try and, you know, recover from his mistake, he instead takes down the player, gives away a penalty within the first 30 seconds. And before I say what happened next, one of the things that he was telling me about was he's always had this mentality through his career, as cliche as it sounds, and it's good for all goalkeepers. It's not what you've done, it's what you do next. It's, you know, focusing on how you can change the game next. Don't dwell on the past, almost. So, you know, he He basically said he wasn't going to dwell on giving away the penalty. And he goes ahead, he saves the penalty. It wasn't the best penalty, but nonetheless, he saves it. And then Sports and KC go on to win 1-0, which obviously, with a save, it's huge. And that, you know, down the line has helped Sports and now with a one seed. So, you know, it does speak a lot to his mentality that he's able to make not one, but two mistakes back to back and then still dig himself out of it and help SKC win.
Absolutely. And he just laid us in a line of terrific goalkeepers for this franchise, starting with Tony Miola and then Jimmy Nielsen and now and now Tim Melia. So, okay, Sean, it's Sunday. It is 3 p.m. at Children's Mercy Park against the San Jose Earthquakes on Fox Sports 1. Mm-hmm. Good day for sports fans in Kansas City. They'll get to see Sporting at 3 and then the Chiefs at 7:20 that night on Sunday Night Football. So, looking forward to your coverage of the game, and hopefully it's just the first of many playoff games for Sporting Kansas City this fall. So, Sean, great catching up with you, and we will talk again soon.
Always appreciate it, Blair. Thank you.
That'll do it for today and this week on SportsBeat KC. Thanks to our production staff of Derek Donovan, Randy Mason, Beth Welsh, Jeff Rosen, Chris Bickett, and Savannah Smith. A tip of the cap to Soichi Terada and Sean Goodwin for stopping by and talking Mizzou and Sporting Kansas City. Links to their stories can be found in the show notes and on kansascity.com. Hey, we have another deal for you, especially for those who want a deeper dive into the Stars' terrific Chiefs coverage. For a limited time, you can subscribe to Sports Pass for 99 cents a month. That's right, 99 pennies a month. After 3 months, it auto-renews at $5.99 a month unless you cancel. How do you get it? You go to kansascity.com/sportspass2020. That's kansascity.com/sportspass2020. You want more than just sports coverage? Of course you do. I know I do. Check out the entire Kansas City Star product. Sports, news, features, commentary, analysis, the whole thing. You get all the stories written by my talented colleagues, plus additional news, sports, and business coverage that comes with the e-edition. The details for all of these deals can be found at account.kansascity.com/subscribe, and that's a lot of dots and dashes. So if you're having trouble hunting down any of these offers, send me an email, bkirkhoff@kcstar.com, and I will get you to the right place. Whether it's the Sports Pass or the full subscription, you're getting and supporting the best sports and news coverage in Kansas City and helping us produce programs like SportsBeat KC. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Monday to break down the Chiefs-Raiders game. Thanks for listening.